naturally. It is a hard read. It is about a hard time in Israel's history. Not a lot of good things happened there. So when we read these words, we might just think, oh, well, that's helpful. I know when this happens. It's happening in the time that the judges ruled. But the original audience, they hear these words. And there's a little bit like, duh, 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 whatever kind of tense music happens in the background is playing in their mind. The original audience heard a warning. It's a bit like me saying, Conrad, did you hear? Yes, you automatically take a step back. Or automatically, you know, your phone dings and there's this breaking news announcement on your phone. Immediately, you brace. Your mind starts to prepare itself, usually for something quite bad. This opening line has already shaped how you're meant to hear what follows. The days when the judges ruled, because they weren't remembered as the good old days. There was death, war, dismemberment, there was all sorts going on. It was a time when people had forgotten the laws of God and they did what was right in their own eyes. A time of violence, of moral confusion, spiritual decline, and we get that, we get chaos. So just before we're introduced to Naomi, before we even get to meet Ruth, before anybody has spoken a single word in this book, the author has quietly whispered to us, this isn't going to begin well, Richard. And sure enough, we're going to continue with that sentence. In the days when the judges ruled, there was famine in the land. And I don't know if there are too many people. I know you will have, Max, seen people who were physically wrought by famine. It's not being hungry. This is life or death stuff. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. And so a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. There's a few things here. You know, we began talking this morning about belonging. And already, in these opening verses, belonging is beginning to unravel for this family. Bethlehem, who can remember what Bethlehem means? House of bread. So the place where this family belongs can no longer feed them. Ironic. Bethlehem, the house of bread, no longer has bread to feed them. This place no longer feels like it can be their home. They need to leave. And so, Elimelech, that'll do. Maybe if I point to you, Richard, you can say it out loud. Elimelech, he makes what is probably feels like the only decision that he can. An almost impossible decision, and he becomes a foreigner in a hostile land. Oh, who knows anything about the Moabites? Were they friends of the Israelites? They were enemies. kind of, if you read throughout the period of Judges, if you read the Old Testament, they were probably at war or serious conflict with the Israelites in and out of about a century and a half. There was a lot of enmity between these groups. So this family leaves their home and goes to the land of a traditional enemy. And the man's name was? Wonderful. His wife's name was Naomi, I've got that one. And the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. And they were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah. And they went to Moab and they lived there. So we're retold that they came from Bethlehem and Judah, but with the additional info that what clan they belonged to. That should give us a little bit of a clue that might be important later on. But we can be of no ignorance here. They left Israel and they went to live in Moab. Ah! Dan, it would be like you going to the stadium and finding that actually you've got to sit with the Blues supporters for it. I know, right? Only bad can happen from that. But we move on. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. And they married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. And after they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died. And Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. You know, most of us here have experienced loss of something in our lives. But Naomi here, first she loses food. You know, they had to leave Bethlehem because there was famine. Bethlehem was her home. She lost food, she lost her home, and then her husband. And then sons' hope and belonging. She lost all sense of belonging. So one by one, the things that tell Naomi who she is, who to, and where to she belongs are completely stripped away from her. And I think it's quite easy for us sitting here in New Zealand where, you know, our safety nets might have a few holes in them. But we have a welfare system of sorts. So we can sit here and just think, dang, that's rough. That wasn't a good day or a good decade. But just as in some places around the world even today, back in the ancient world, they didn't have any modern safety nets. A widow's security was almost entirely bound up in the family that she was or belonged to. A husband, sons, that wider household. Naomi had lost all of them. And if she had been younger, she might have been able to return to a father. She might have been able to remarry and have more sons. If she'd had a male relative to be her protector, she might have been able to earn a living through a trade. But Naomi here, we're told quite dramatically, has none of these options. She's too old to remarry and bear children. And she's living in a foreign land that is far away from any extended family who might be able to help her. She's lost her future. She's lost her place. That place that she belongs. She's an aging widow, a stranger in a foreign land, with no one left to care for her, and no obvious way to survive. But even now as the depth of her tragedy, is unfolded for us, the author shows us this first glimmer of hope, where God is at work. So when Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them. You know, the story had started out in Bethlehem with a famine, but now the plot's quite dramatically shifted. We're now told that the Lord has visited his people with bread. The place of bread now has some. And when this family had left because there was no food, Naomi now starts the plan, that long journey home from the hill country in Bethlehem, down across the Red Sea, up to the hill country in Moab. And it's only the smallest hint of hope that we get. Her husband's still gone, her sons are still gone, nothing has been restored. But for the first time in the story, the author tells us, see here, God is at work. He is present. And Naomi sets out for home. And up until that point, everything's happened really, really quickly. The famine, her husband dying, migration, marriage, death. The author has just rushed us through more than a decade of events in just a few short verses. But now the pace changes. And we start to hear people speak. And then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, So when Naomi heard that Moab, that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. And with her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would have taken them back to the land of Judah. And then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, go back, each of you, to your mother's home. And may the Lord show you kindness as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. And may the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband. And then she kissed them goodbye. And they wept aloud and said to her, we'll go back with you to your people. So this is the first time in the story that we hear voices. We hear these three grieving widows on the road. Three women, three uncertain futures, but Naomi knows exactly what's ahead of her. She's returning home with no husband, no sons, no certainty of what tomorrow will bring. But she also knows something else. For Orpah and for Ruth, they still have a choice. So when in an extraordinary act of love, Naomi here says, go back each of you to your mother's home. And may the Lord show you kindness. Isn't that remarkable? This woman who has such a little amount of, just hope or connection left. She has nothing left to give except her blessing. And that she gives freely and willingly. She blesses them. She sacrifices that last little bit of support she has in the world in order that they might flourish. That they could return to safety and security. And she prays that the Lord would show them the same kindness they've already shown her. If you read the paper plane a couple of weeks ago, I've introduced that term to you. It was hesed. It's one of those beautiful words that doesn't translate quite easily into English. Kindness is part of it. Love is part of it. So is loyalty. So is faithfulness. So is commitment. But so is sacrifice. It's the kind of sacrificial loving kindness that keeps showing up time and time again when it would be easier just to walk away. It's the word that the Old Testament writers use again and again to describe God's covenant love for his people, his love for us. And Naomi prays that these two women would experience God's hesed. And as we kept on reading, they protest. Naomi tells them again to return to their people. And her reasoning here, I think, is painfully logical. I can't give you a future. I want what is best for you, but I can't provide for you. If you stay with me, you will become like me, and I have no hope. I'm old, I'm widowed, I'm vulnerable. You guys will be foreigners in Bethlehem. So Naomi loves them enough to let them go. Because in her mind, following her means giving up any hope of belonging anywhere again. And at this point, we know the story, don't we? This is a painting. I think 1795, was it? William Blake? At this point, we know that Orpah does exactly what Ruth exhorts her to do. And I've sometimes heard Orpah criticized for that decision. But I love this painting because I think the artist gets it. There is pain in that choice. But she chooses the sensible path. She goes back to her family, she goes back to her culture, everything she has ever known. But then, as we keep on reading through chapter 1, comes one tiny little sentence just after Orpah leaves. And in English, it's translated, "But Ruth clung to her." Clung! Where have we, you probably won't pick it, do you know where we have heard, probably we might know cleaved to one another? In the Bible. Right in Genesis, when a man will cling, and a woman will cling to her husband. It's that same word that husband and wife leave their families and they will cling together. We're expected to see by the use of this word that Ruth has made a covenant decision. She's letting go of belonging to one group to embrace and choose another. And suddenly this story becomes no longer just about geography and full pantries. It isn't about being in Moab or being in Bethlehem. It's about identity. It's about family. It's about belonging, being so much more than just where you are. So much more than just a feeling even. It's about choosing who will be your people. you choosing who will be your people. Because Naomi has one final plea. Your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and her gods. Go back with her. It's the logical choice. It's the safe choice. It's the expected choice. But the kingdom of God often calls us out beyond the end of logic. And Ruth speaks. Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me. I think those are incredibly beautiful words. They're also very familiar words, I think, for most of us. And I wonder if we've stopped recently, if we hear them and wonder how costly those words really were. You know, throughout this story so far, we've seen that Naomi has lost belonging. And we see Orpah just returning to belonging that she's always known. But here we see Ruth choosing belonging. I think her words are breathtaking. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. You know, that choice echoes down through the generations. And it reaches us today. You know, where are we choosing to belong? Who are the people that we're choosing to belong to? What are the voices that are shaping us, that we are allowing to speak to us and influence what we do? What are the values that are claiming our loyalty? Which kingdom are we choosing to belong to? We're going to have communion together this morning. And coming to the table, jumping forward, I think most of you know the ending of this little book. And we remember that Ruth's story doesn't end with Ruth. Through Ruth comes Obed, then Jesse, then King David, and generations later, in Bethlehem, another child is born. And he becomes the bread of life. You know, Ruth chose to bind herself to a grieving widow. Jesus, the bread of life, chose to bind himself to a broken humanity. He chose to bind himself to you and to me. Jesus chose to belong to Naomi's family. And Jesus chose us to belong to his family. You know, that's the heart of God. It's a God who welcomes outsiders, even those who were once enemies. A God who binds himself to those with nothing to offer. We come with empty hands. It's a God who creates a family where there was once only loneliness. Paul writes in Ephesians 2, "He came and preached to you, peace to you who were far away, and peace to those who were near. For through him we have access to the Father by one Spirit. Consequently, you are no longer foreigners and strangers, but you are fellow citizens with God's people and also members of his household, built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, with Jesus Christ himself as the cornerstone. In him, the whole building is joined together and rises to become a holy temple in the Lord. And in him, you too are being built together to become a dwelling in which God lives by the Spirit." Can I invite the servers up to come and serve out the elements today, please? Who's the duty? Anyone just want to jump up? Yeah, the young people can. Thank you. I'm going to wait until everybody has the bread and the cup, and we're going to take these together this morning. Because we belong together, not because of anything that we have done, but because of what Christ has done for us at this table. After this, there's only another hour of sermonizing to go. I'm always looking for ways to get fired, and one of the ones that came up today was maybe preaching until 2 p.m. I could probably do it.